I had some parts of my childhood that were like very, 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 very difficult, and I had to grow up way too fast. I think that's where my like rumination had a chance to first like run free, because I didn't have the distraction of being around other people and living life. You're playing on like, yes, autism, I love it. I'm like, yeah.
Look, I'm playing it like me.
And I'm like, oops. What do you think about me? What do you think about me?
Damien Haas. He's a voice of many beloved characters in mega popular properties like Fortnite, Fire Emblem, Starfield, and Netflix's Delicious in Dungeon. Despite his struggles with ADHD, autism, and OCD, he's found his place as a beloved Smosh cast member and streamer. How has he continued to find success as a comedian in an ensemble cast when he constantly feels like an outsider? How does he deal with the overwhelming pressure of his many careers amid spirals of worry? And what does it mean when he says he has a touch of the tism? I'm Anthony Padilla, and I spent today with Damien Haas to find out.
Hello, Damien Haas.
Hi, Anthony Padilla.
Hello. You joined Smosh right when I was leaving.
Quite literally right when you were leaving.
Yeah, I feel like I probably saw you in the office one time. It was like 2017.
You saw me very specifically in one spot in the office. Do you remember where that was?
Was it in a bathroom?
It was in a bathroom.
Oh, I saw you in a bathroom.
Yeah, I was peeking over the stall. I was like, nice to meet you. No, I think we had like a quick moment of like, okay. Oh, hey, hi, how's it going? Yeah, nice
yeah,
to meet
you. Yeah, yeah. I mean, honestly, they mentioned that they were thinking about hiring you. And sure. Then they were just like, oh, by the way, his first day is that. I was like, I didn't know anything.
I was the straw that broke your back. Yes.
Yeah.
I had like a habit of joining things at the end of their lifespan. And I was like, figures.
Was that you on Disney?
Yeah. Yeah. Because So Random was the show I was on with Shane, but it was technically the fourth season of Sunny with a Chance. Disney shows don't tend to go more than four seasons at max. So mm-hmm. It was like, all right, well, got 1 year of Disney. And yeah, I kept having like jobs that were less fun in between that, like retail, customer support. Mm. And I was just like, well, damn, back to that I go. Leather crafting was the thing before Smosh.
Oh, shit, yeah, you were leather crafting.
Yeah, that was way better than the rest of them.
What were you crafting?
Dog collars.
Didn't you have a beard at the time?
I did.
That leather crafting with the big old beard. Show me a picture. You're like, here's me leather crafting. And it was you with the big ass beard.
My face is like that of a baby, but the beard is so
yes,
full.
Yeah.
It's like a joke. That's not supposed to be like a real guy.
It looked like a character creation mishap.
Mm-hmm.
What was the audition process like for Smosh? Because I wasn't part of that.
I can't emphasize enough how little I wanted or facilitated you being here. Shane and I were roommates when he started working at Smosh. So the thought was like, hey, if, you know, anything ever comes up, I'll at least, like, see what's available. And so mm-hmm. he opened the door to, like, getting me the audition, but, like, that's all you can do for someone, you know? You can't just be like, come have a job! So, yeah. And it was me and two other people, and they just had us play Mario Kart. People.
Just, like, be entertaining?
Be entertaining, like, have fun, just do what you would normally do. Then I got a callback for that. Then they had me come in and talk to the Smosh Games cast, standing up in front of this whole group, just like, hi, like very much like, introduce yourself to the class that you might not join.
Yeah.
I was like, hi.
You're just the new kid.
I like games super and awkward. Playing and fun. Then they took me out to dinner at the Stinking Rose.
Really weird place.
Really weird place.
Yeah.
Lots of garlic. Good for talking to people.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. So tell me more. The music's really loud. Come on, get close. I want to taste the garlic off your breath.
Don't blame them. I think they wanted to make sure I wasn't a vampire because I'm pale.
That's true.
Yeah.
It was a security measure. And then, you know, Defy shuts down mm-hmm. and you come back on when Smosh is now owned by Mythical.
First of all, like in between then, I started streaming on my own, which was awesome because it was the first time I was like, oh, like I can do a thing on my own. And I think a lot of the Smosh audience found me there on Twitch because like Smosh content had like gone away. They were like, well, this is something. But that's been a part of my life since then. So I'm glad to, I felt way more confident in myself coming back because I was like, whatever, I've got my own cool
so
thing too.
So you feel
too.
Like an individual rather than like just like one little gear in the mechanism.
Basically. Yes. And I'd been voice acting, you know, that whole time too, but like, that doesn't really pay the bills in that capacity, especially. But yeah, when I went back to Smosh via Mythical, I was the only like OG Smosh Games member that had signed on at that point. And they'd say something like, okay guys, we're gonna go have a meeting with the cast. And I was like, I'm included in that, right? And they're like, well, we're talking like core cast today. I'm like, ooh, core cast. I'm kind of the only one who's not that.
So you felt like an outsider.
I felt like an outsider, and it also was frustrating because I have a sketch background. If I'm the only one who's not doing this, that's weird in and of itself, and it's not like you have to teach me a new thing. Like, I'm here. I can just be in the background, but, like, why exclude?
So then you transitioned over to become more integrated.
Yes.
I feel like you are one of the strongest improv actors and performers.
Thank you very much.
Like, Try Not to Laugh was the first big group ensemble thing that I did coming back into Smosh.
That was really special.
It was 6 years after I had left, and I felt so rusty in my improv and acting, performing, all that stuff, because I had spent all that time developing this show. Mm-hmm. So when I come back, I'm totally out of the rhythm, but you and everyone else so locked in, and you fucking brought it. Like, you showed what, like, it meant to perform confidently doing improv.
Being an improviser is very freeing. You know, you can just sort of say whatever comes to your brain, and you trust the people around you to be, like, sources of information and sources of support.
Seeing that fearlessness in improv and being so strong in that, as I get to know you more, you'd start to talk about autism, ADHD, OCD, self-worth, all these other elements that I would have never been able to see from the outside, especially performing next to you. I just think it's really interesting because there are so many people that look up to you as an icon of, you know, mental health things.
Yeah.
You make it look easy somehow.
Thank you. I mean, look, autism is a spectrum, and that doesn't... I think sometimes people fall into the trap of thinking, like, oh, a little bit autism to very autism. But in reality, it's like a three-dimensional sort of orb of placements where it's like, okay, you don't have sensory issues, but you do have issues communicating, or vice versa. And so I'm very fortunate, having chosen this path, that, like, a lot of the stuff that I experience is a little bit more internal. I think you go your whole life kind of masking these things, and I've been an actor since I was like 9. It all just becomes a part of it, and we're all just kind of agreeing to do this kind of social construct together. So it's a very fun balance of there being specific rules, but also no rules.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very freeing place, at least for me, to play. Knowing that I hadn't gotten to work with you in those 6 years and everybody else had history with you, I was like, well, I want to make a good impression. So
yeah. Well, you did.
Thank you.
You know, I noticed a difference in the way that we both approached the same video concept, which was really interesting because we were both given the same rules to work within.
Yeah.
But I go up there and I feel like I got to get a laugh right away. Mm. I feel like it's about getting that laugh, then feeling like I'm safe. All I wanted to do was get that, and then I was kind of like done, because I was like, whew, okay, got that one, next thing.
Nice.
But the thing I observed with you is that it almost seemed like you weren't trying. It felt like it was just a natural state. It didn't seem like you cared if you got a laugh. It just felt like it just happened. Like, you gave it time to breathe. You weren't afraid to take the full 30 seconds that you have. Like, you made it look like you were just, it was so effortless.
Well, thank you. I think something that's missing when a lot of people start to, like, learn improv in general is feeling free to fail.
Mm.
Like, it's truly okay to go out there and not get a laugh, but I also think that that's something that you can say, but it takes a while to kind of lock that in.
Yeah, to actually feel it.
To actually feel it. I think because I look at things through a lens of, like, what is normal or what is right, and, like, sometimes I don't get that right. Like, the way I describe my experience being neurodivergent is, like, I will either read something to a T or miss it entirely. And there's very rarely a middle ground. So, like, I feel more nervous about being in the chair of, like, I hope I laugh at the right time.
Oh, really?
Sometimes I can sort of see where a joke is going before it goes there, and I can't really turn it off. Like, my brain will know.
So it won't make you necessarily laugh because you...
No, because I'm, like, in that mode and I can't turn it off. So I have to let myself in that moment be like, this is the right laugh time, and this is when I would normally laugh.
It's funny because that's where I feel least pressure. I'm like,
really?
I just get to exist.
Yeah.
You're on the opposite sides.
That's why I really enjoy streaming, is like, I feel like I get to split my brain a little bit, where like that other track gets to talk to chat while one track is focusing on a game. And that's when I'm fully like, ah, I'm occupied. This is great.
Because your brain is doing two things at once.
Yeah.
You feel like you need your brain to do two things at once to feel satisfied.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't play a game without a TV on. I can't.
Are you doing, like, two things right now?
Absolutely. I'm stimming with my ring. I'm stimming with my feet. Talking to you. Yeah. The ADHD thing, the autism ADHD combo with OCD. Like, OCD is much more managed for me because I found medication that works. And then everything else is just like, that's how I operate. It's, you know, autism is not a thing to fix. It's just like, this is the deck of cards you're playing with. So for me, it's more a matter of just like, what can I adapt to fit in with other people in a way that's comfortable for me and everyone else?
Oh, was it the other day you brought something that you're like, oh, I'd like to, like,
but I feel like I was making
a joke. You had earplugs.
Oh, yeah.
You literally brought earplugs to the party.
Yeah. I get very overloaded with sensory things sometimes.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to realize that, like, that's not normal. Like, I'd be looking around being like, can't everyone tell that this guy's clicking his pen?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, but no one gives a shit. But I'd be like, well, I can't focus on anything else. It's like an earthquake in my brain.
So then you have your earplugs with you.
Yeah, they're great. I have them in my bag right now.
Sometimes you'll kind of analyze the way that you are in a social setting and be like, is this the same as everyone else? Is this different? Is this wrong?
Sometimes the comments that get to you are the ones that like say things you don't like about yourself. So I got one recently that was like, you know, Damien's humor has been different the past few months. I don't think he's as funny or I don't think he's as free. And I'm like, damn, I think you're right. Like, I think I've been very in my head the past several months about like how I'm coming across or how I'm affecting other cast members. And I really want to play nice and do a good job. And I've lost a little bit of that freedom, but that purely comes from me really thinking about how I'm affecting people and not just letting myself like, I'm going to play a game. You know, yeah.
I mean, I don't see it. But again, if it's just one comment that says something that you are starting to suspect about yourself, it makes you feel like everyone sees it.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think it's that one person. I've had to realize that it's like if you get one comment that says something that does touch on an insecurity, it doesn't mean that everyone secretly believes it.
I know. Well, the problem is that when we believe it, like if I start to think that about myself already and then comment says it, it doesn't matter if 1,000 comments are really nice. That one is like, yep, I knew it.
Yeah. I suppose the issue then isn't if other people believe it, it's if you believe it.
Right, which I think in a way I do.
Yeah. I mean, that's hard to get out of though.
It is. Yeah. But I will at some point. I think, weirdly, I've always been like a I'll just figure it out kind of guy. But in the same way with like brain stuff, it's like I've been really in my head lately. Well, one day I'll wake up and I won't be.
You just have confidence that it'll work itself out.
Yeah. I'm like, I'll wake up one day and be so busy that I forget to be in my head. And then, ta-da.
Have you always felt separate though? Like in your childhood? Did you feel that sense of like...
Yeah, actually.
Otherness?
Yeah. I'm just starting to sort of like work through all that. But yeah, I had some parts of my childhood that were like very, 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 very difficult, and I had to grow up way too fast. And so I always thought it was kind of because of that, but I've realized later, like, I think I process things differently, and like, it works out really well in school, the way things are traditionally laid out. Like, tests were easy because...
It's like a logic-based figuring out? Or like, how is it different?
Yeah, I guess like my logic was different, or I just felt a little bit separate. Like, I felt like I was watching everybody else have these experiences in school, and I was like there, but I was visiting in a way.
Like you didn't feel at home.
Right, right. I think as a kid, I was like a goofy, you know, high energy little boy, and therefore I had like a lot of friends through that. But as I started to grow older and just like think more and go through different things, I just felt less and less like I had anything in common with people in school. And it's so funny because like with TikTok now, it'll be like, oh, you're so mature for your age. You're an old soul. And that actually translates to, I think that kid might be autistic.
So you feel like your brain wasn't really at like this childhood state of mind?
Yeah, I think that went away like very early for me, you know, and I think the OCD stuff was very early too. Like, think back and I was like 5 years old and I was like washing my hands way too much to the point like where they would bleed. And like, it's like, that's too soon. And
so the obsessive, like repeatable nature of is
rumination and tics and things like that. You'll think about, you know, an issue, you know, say for example, like everyone hates me. Like that's not really one I think about, but just using it as an example.
Yeah.
And then you'll go through like every reason that that's definitely true. And then you're like, wait, I've got to go through every reason that can't be true. And then I'll replay that, you know, conversation that I had, but actually, what if I made up that part of the conversation?
You have like infinite thoughts that stem from infinite thoughts.
It's a cycle, it's a rumination. And so, you know, you can't break out of that. Whereas, you know, a technique that I would learn in therapy is like, all right, well, like, what if everybody does? Like, then what? You know, what does that mean? Like, let's say, for instance, that's true.
Does that end the loop?
It should. And that's what I couldn't do. And so that's why the meds have helped.
Was it medication that you feel helped most, or do you think that there's also other things?
I mean, as an adult, I, you know, started therapy a few years back. I found the right meds. Yes, I think it's a combination of therapy, and for some people, meds are the right answer, and for me, it very much helped. I started to take medications because I realized, you know, I was learning all these tools in therapy that were very helpful in theory, but I wasn't able to apply them because I was like, I'm too far in this direction right now where I can't even utilize what I'm learning. So the meds definitely helped me get more of a stable base within which to apply those techniques and tools and thought processes.
You're not just acting with your physical presence. You are also voice acting, and you've honed in on voice acting.
Which I love.
Let's talk voice acting.
Let's talk voice acting. Anthony, can we talk voice acting?
Let's talk voice acting. But I know that you like to do more than one thing at once, so I got something planned for you.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of this game called Starfield?
I have heard of it.
So I'm going to hand you this controller,
and you
are going to create a character. Are you the first voice in this game?
I'm the second.
Second voice?
I thought you were the first. I know.
I was pretty impressed. No, I'm not at all.
I'm the guy that wakes you up.
Really?
Yeah, but not Lynn. Heller.
Hey, come on. Okay, take it easy. You were out cold. No physical damage. Mentally, the jury's still out.
Do you know all these by heart?
No, I just did the TikTok, like, I'm a voice actor, and so I did that line.
Any of this look familiar?
Familiar?
Yeah, so that was a fun thing. So that I worked on for around 6 years total. Never breathed a word about it because it is...
Wait, so how old were you when you recorded that audio clip?
I had just started at Smosh.
Really?
It was like maybe a couple months after I started at Smosh.
So that was like 2017.
2016, 2017, yeah.
Damn, that's crazy.
I mean, some of these games take a while and you really can't... breathe a word about it.
Did that feel like torture to know that you had this cool thing, or was it kind of like a cool secret that you had in your pocket?
To be honest, that's kind of how voice acting is in general. I mean, the time varies, but you can't breathe a word about anything, and I stick to that. So
yeah.
Sometimes people are like, oh, what are you working on? Like, do you do anything? And there are all these things you'd love to brag about, or if you meet another voice actor who's in a big game that's out right now, you want to be like, I work in the same way you do, but you can't say it. You just have to be like,
I do a thing too.
Dunkin' Donuts regional radio commercial.
So you recorded for 6 years?
Across 6 years, yeah.
I thought that you did all your recording 6 years ago, or 7 years ago at this point.
No, it would be like once or twice a year I'd be brought in and be like, hey, remember? So I'd be like, hey, can you play that again? And like, when I first recorded it, like, there was not like a Northeast accent, but it was a little bit of like an affectation. And then a little bit more like slipped in. And then I'd be like, wait, listen back. And they're like, yeah, you've got that accent. And I'm like, all right, a little bit more of an accent. And then like, by midway through the game, it was almost like a game of telephone, where by the end of it, I'm like, yeah, my mom is on this moon. And you know,
so wait, did you have to re-record anything? Or
no.
Just with the character's voice evolved?
It ended up
evolved.
Working out. Yeah. I mean, I listened back to it. I'm like, that's more or less the same guy.
Yeah.
But I'm very sensitive to sound. I think probably because of the tism.
Tism will get you.
I was bit as a boy and I turned. Oh, we got Roadhouse.
So wait, when you go to create a character, are you trying to make it look like you, or are you just going like what do you do? I want to see you create a character and explain kind of the thought process behind it.
When I stream, I have a stream mascot. He was created when I had a like dead-end customer support job, and I used to just play Dark Souls all the time and make new characters. I'll go with that, actually.
Okay.
If you're fine with that.
Wait, so this is like your mascot?
Yeah, just the guy I make in like every game.
Wait, so you have a guy you make in every game?
Yeah. Also, in every game I play, I try to make the character naked, too.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Extra challenge, and also kind of funny.
Can you make the... characters naked in this game?
Yes, it doesn't work well because you're in space.
Oh. No, I think that would be great because then every appendage floats individually.
Sure, yeah. And I do like that usually. His name is Go-Go Hippo Go, all caps.
Is that what comes out of a depressed moment in life?
Yeah, it's like a poorly translated 90s anime opening, you know what I mean? It's
like, I feel like if you make an anime, I feel like if you made one, that's what you would...
100%. This is my soft pitch to you.
Yeah?
That I would need funding real bad.
Oh, yeah.
What
is it you need this money for?
I want to do all my development on this anime while on a pleasure barge that's out to sea, where like someone's just peeling grapes and feeding it to me. That's where the money goes. I need $500,000 to research what it went up because we don't know what a pleasure barge is. So now we have to research.
Oh, dang. I shouldn't have asked.
Keep it up. We'll make it a million.
Okay, you're in. So wait, your guy that you create in every game looks like he's dripping fire out of his soul?
Have you just never seen our ginger before?
No.
You're like, what is the fire spewing out of your bones?
I've never seen someone with that color hair in my life.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this guy's from space, so there you go. No, usually if it was like a Dark Souls, you know, character creator, I make the skin slider like paper white.
Okay.
And everything else just bright red. And I take every sort of proportion thing, and I just make it as unique as possible.
Unique.
Yeah. Oh, man,
pretty
no.
Unique.
That's He looks like a cartoon moon right there.
That's good.
Look at that.
That's
good.
He's got
the kabump.
Do you have any idea how many characters you've voice acted for? Hundreds, right?
I wouldn't say hundreds. Probably a couple 50s. Dozen.
Couple dozen?
Couple dozen. Well, voice acting stuff is like few and far between, especially when it's a job that's big enough to be like, oh, this is a character, as opposed to, you know, oh, it's coffee shop guy, and he says, here's your coffee, and like, that's it. So if you're including that, like, yeah, a lot.
As like side characters, but...
Yeah.
But like dozens of main characters that are like recurring throughout.
I'd say at least a dozen or so.
I mean, there's a bunch that people know.
Yeah.
That they might not know as you. Can you list off some of them?
Absolutely. And that's the exciting thing now, too, is like, I just did that TikTok, like, I'm a voice actor, and then you say the line... And it's just, I got so many comments of like, what the hell?
That's you?
That's you? So anime right now, I'm Lios in Delicious in Dungeon. That's a big one and I love it. Streaming now on Netflix, Kyoka Kudo on My Happy Marriage. Let's see, video game stuff. I'm Shez in Fire Emblem. He was the purple haired protag boy of like a couple games ago.
Just like you.
Just like me. I did that to like celebrate that role. But
wait,
also,
you dyed your hair purple to celebrate the role?
Yes, but also I wanted to change anyway, so I'm just like, yeah, it's because of the role entirely.
You had that look
like,
for a while, too.
It was fun. I liked purple.
Mm-hmm.
Purple
mm-hmm.
was nice. Thank you. Bunch of voices in Fortnite. I'm Dennis
That's
in
crazy.
Fortnite Save the World. I've been three different bosses, like seasonal bosses.
That's crazy.
Thank you.
How did you get your foot in the door?
That was a very lucky situation. So I was on the Disney Channel show with Shane, and then after that, my manager at the time was like, hey, you know, you should start working with a publicist. You know, you're going to be famous now. You're a Disney kid. And I was like, oh, okay. And so my publicist at the time asked, like, what do you want to do?
Mm.
And I was like, I kind of like longboarding right now. I'm kind of interested in, you know, this, that, video games. Kind of want to try voice acting. And she was like, great. I have a voice acting agent I've worked with before. I will get you a meeting and then the rest is up to you. And I was like, great. So I got that meeting. They agreed to like try me out for a few months. And then through doing that, I booked Grand Theft Auto V as like a background role. And then I was like next up in the running for some commercial with Pepsi and Taylor Swift, like a collab between them, you know. And I think I was like their second choice. So my agent was like, okay, we'll sign you. Like, clearly you're booking. Go for it. And then just from there, I started. I took one-hour like session with a video game voice acting coach, which I like recorded. And I was like, all right, I'm going to internalize that forever. And that's it.
Just and that's your training?
Yeah.
Your training is a one-hour course?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then and then a lot of dedication to learning the craft on your own and kind of self-teaching.
Or whatever. No, I'm kidding.
But like self-taught after that. Like beyond that, there was more that you put into it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the very act of auditioning every day, you know, you start
that's part of your teacher.
It's part of your teaching. And you start to look at things through the context of like, okay, who's booking? Like, what sounds do I hear in, you know, video games and movies? And, you know, it gets to the point where you can start to listen in and be like, oh, they recorded that line later. Like, that was in a different room.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or, you know, oh, that person wasn't really Ryan Reynolds. They had a voice match for him because clearly he couldn't come to the studio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so...
Did you ever have fear going into an audition? I feel like it's... In my past, it's been scary to, like... I don't know, submit something and feel like there's so much pressure on, like, this being a deciding factor.
I mean, I always did a lot of, like, on-camera auditions leading up to the voice acting stuff, and there was a lot of overlap, too.
That's true, you're already on Disney.
I was already on Disney, but, like, I was always nervous about that stuff. I didn't realize until way later, like, I don't belong auditioning on camera. Like, that's not my thing, but I thought it was supposed to be. So voice acting, there's a lot less pressure. I think every once in a while, they'll get an audition that I can sort of piece together, like, oh, I know what this is. And this matters to me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So those are a little nerve-wracking. But, you know, that's kind of how I felt with the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth that just came out. I had a couple smaller roles. Like, one of them had a name. And I was very proud because, again, Final Fantasy VII was a very meaningful game for me. But when those auditions started rolling in, I was like, oh, crap. Like, this is kind of what I got started for. Like, I better make it count. And so, you know, even just being in there in a small way meant a lot.
Yeah.
But now it's gotten sort of to the point where... You just sort of have to audition and let it go. You know, you can't be thinking about it all the time. And that's a lot healthier of a way to go about things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I also have some good relationship point where I, every once in a while, I'll be offered a job I didn't audition for.
Mm.
So I'll be like, hey, we know you'd be good for this thing. And
oh, that's awesome. When you get to the point where you don't have to audition and people are offering you roles, like that's the dream, right?
For sure. And I think I'll still always audition. Like I think you're always going to have to submit that. But just being known, you know, these people do this for a living and it's their job to cast things well. And to be thought of at all in that capacity is just, like, you know, imposter syndrome is still there, but that certainly helps.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Of course. I mean, do you feel like you still have imposter syndrome sometimes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been a process of, sure, of letting that go. I feel like my imposter syndrome really gets loud when I'm doing things that don't naturally fit with my natural state. There are things that I feel like I have to do.
I mean, that's wild to me because, like, I think about you and Ian starting as teenagers. You guys were just like, ah, oh, we're going to film ourselves and put it out there. Like, what?
Yeah.
I get made fun of in high school for existing, and you guys are like, we're going to film ourselves making jokes.
Yeah, it was a weird thing where I didn't see the point of it as being something for others to approve of as much. Mm-hmm. Eventually, it became that. Eventually, it turned into a thing where doing what I was doing was there for a sense of validation within myself. But it didn't start like that. And I think it was because I at the time, I was like, being on camera and being perceived and commented on, judged, is just like part of this bigger picture for me, which was to create like a brand, to create something bigger. It was just like, wow, me being on camera was just a part of it. It's not the point of it. But after a while, I got to a point where I thought it was the point of my life or career or self-worth. And that's when I started to really like get attached to the positive and negative.
Yeah.
But in the early days, I didn't care about the positive or negative. I was like, they don't know me. They don't know what I'm about.
Yeah, I think for me, it's really hard to be misunderstood in general. Like, that's a huge trigger. So, like, if someone says, you know, in a comment, like, you're not funny, you suck, I'm like, that's entirely fair. Like, I don't know you. I annoy you on camera for whatever reason. Like, so it goes. You're not going to be for everybody. But if someone says either something that I already kind of believe about myself, or it's like, man, Damian clearly was so mad at this person or is so jealous of this person, or like, they're assuming things about my motives.
Yeah.
That's when I like white knuckle into my own leg and I'm like, I can't comment back, but that sucks.
I feel that as well. Yeah. It's been a process to get away from that mentality. And, you know, I think that just shows that there is some room for internal growth and,
yeah,
you know, to like trust and love all of who you are to the point where you know that that's not true and it's okay for them to think that. But it's very hard to get that. I don't think I'm past it, but sure, I'm realizing that that's there. Whenever there is a feeling that comes up, I'm like, this isn't about them, because people will perceive and come up with an idea of who you are no matter what you do. This is a sign that there's a part of me that feels fear and what that might mean.
Yeah, it's for me, I think it's like letting go of control of like, well, they feel that about you. You're probably not going
to convince
them otherwise.
Very hard to say that's okay.
Yeah, it is so hard to say it's okay. Because it's not just like, oh, like I thought Damian would wear this kind of shoes. It's like, I bet as a person in your core, you're actually mean.
It's about
and
your
you
identity.
Yes, exactly. But no, now I just get to hide behind all these fun characters and do voices, and it makes me happy.
Right. So this is, in a sense, it's a way for you to be able to perform without being perceived in your physical form.
I mean, kind of, yeah, because, like, I'm sure you've noticed, you know, just in our time together, like, even on camera today, though it's not so bad today, I've got, like, facial tics.
Right.
Like, I blink really
I actually
hard
did not realize.
Oh, well, thank you. But
I didn't see it.
Oh. So it goes. Oh. But, like, I blink really hard, especially if I'm, like, sleep-deprived or nervous, you know. I've got the tism, as I've mentioned. So, you know, I went through, like, all this on-camera acting stuff being like, you know, why is this so hard for me? Like, when the camera gets really close up, like, theater was totally fine. Why am I not booking the on-camera stuff? Like, you know, they said I'm too animated. Then I pull it back and then they say I'm doing nothing. I don't get that. And now I'm like, oh, my face does different things. And I was having to like work at appearing quote unquote normal. And again, sort of working to get to the baseline that everyone else had. Whereas with voice acting, I feel so free. And it feels like, oh yeah, I'm in this character. Like I've got a huge improv background. Like it's easy to embody a character and just live as them, talk as them.
There's no friction with this one layer of like, what am I doing with my face? Now you get to skip that and just go straight to the craft of what you actually care about.
Absolutely. And like, you know, there's something about getting in a costume and having makeup and feeling like, okay, I'm embodying this character. Cool. But at the same time, I get to do that now with the characters that I play in games just by looking at, like, the artwork.
And so your imagination of I am that person instead of, like, a physical...
Absolutely, thing. Yeah. It's, because with voice acting, you do tend to move a lot. You just can't make noise while doing it. But, like, you know, my posture will change. Like, I just, in Unicorn Overlord, that just came out, like, I played an angel person named Sanatio, and he was, like, a priest. So, like, I see him holding that staff. I see him a little more regal, but he's also, like, very elegantly
looking. And then you want to position your body.
Position your body. Like, naturally, you're just like, you know, this is how I speak.
This is how they would talk. A little bit more.
And you might move your hand like this because it's a little more lilting. And then triangle strategy, I played a guy named Julio, and he had, like, these really sharp eyebrows, and his hands were always behind his back. And I'm like,
so you want to stand like that when you record, right?
Right, which you can't do because your lungs get a little compressed when you're like this. But still, like, it's very rigid, and, you know, the rules matter a lot. And if something is well-written and well-designed, everything sort of informs everything else in a way that... you know, you can always pull from it.
Yeah.
You know, Lyos in Delicious in Dungeon, it's a very important character to me, and I really love it and care about it. You know, he's kind of a knight-looking guy, but he doesn't have a shield, and he doesn't have a helmet, and it's sort of like, okay, well, what does that say about this character, and, you know, what does that say about the world? Like, okay, is death not that big of a deal in this world, and that therefore you don't need a helmet, or is it more important that he can look around and observe things, because he is a very observant person, as opposed to being a protector, you know?
Does your character have autism?
A lot of people who read it, their headcanon is sort of that he does. It's not a confirmed thing either way, and it's not my place to confirm it.
But you know.
Well.
You know.
Well, no, I mean, I'll say this, like, I remember auditioning for it. I had my takes all done, and then I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do one more take and just, like, completely throw it away. Like, just be myself, just be as natural as possible, very understated, and see what happens. And then I did, and apparently that's the take that, like, booked me the role. And so I was like, okay, I'm being very myself, and this is the take that booked me the role. And then the second the show premiered, everyone's like, you're playing him like he has autism. I love it. I'm like, yeah.
Look, I'm playing it like me.
And I'm like, oops. And so, like, yes. So, you know, I think he's very much coded in that way, and it's very much brought up that, like, he has difficulty reading the room, but he has very specific interests that he really, you know, can benefit him in a lot of ways, but his skills are lacking in other ways. So, like, whether he has autism or not, those kinds of traits very much speak to people who are neurodivergent. And I've been very much honored with that level of trust, because I've been getting a lot of comments from people saying, like, hey, I, you know, the way you're playing this, like, I really feel seen. And it means, that means a lot. So yeah, it's been very special. So again, I can't confirm or deny anything. It's not my place. He's already got an author, but.
Got it.
Yeah.
What do you think it is about being seen in that way that feels so good?
I think specifically for people who are neurodivergent, it is so difficult to be seen as, like, a natural part of a story, in the same way that anybody else with any other aspect of their life, you know, who would have, like, a disability. Like, if they see representation in the media, that's going to be a big part of it, where it's like, the biggest part of this story is, like, this person's in a wheelchair, as opposed to, like, hey, that's just how the character is, you know? And that's the same with autism. It's like, you know, the good doctor of, like, I am a surgeon, or, like, the Big Bang Theory. Like, that's sort of what you see, as opposed to, like, just that's their traits.
Just and vibing.
For better or for worse, it can come up. Like, you know, not being able to read the room does come up. It's a difficulty. But also, you know, having very hyper-specific knowledge about things also comes up and is helpful. But the story isn't about that. It's just a character who has these traits.
Right.
And I think that's why it's special. And also, like, you can laugh with him.
Instead of laughing at.
Yeah. I think, and also, like, you know, you look at Love on the Spectrum, right? And you hear about, you know, oh, you've got to watch this. Like, it's so sweet. And I started out like, oh, this is going to be awesome. Like, cool. Dating is kind of really hard in this capacity, but then it's just like, this is John is 38, lives with his mum,
and likes choo-choo trains. He hates, like, the sound of a lawnmower and the sound of someone getting stabbed to death.
Yes, honestly, and I love those things, so we're all different. But it's like, it's the same type of person where it's like, this person likes choo-choo trains, like this person likes Legos, like this person likes dinosaurs, and they're all just like, put them in front of a camera and there's like 50 people watching and they're like, I have a hard time talking, and then that's it. And so it's very like spectacle driven, I think, a lot of the time. Even if the intent is good, because I don't think people are trying to like exploit anybody, just seeing a varied nature of it is maybe what connects to people.
Yeah. Yeah, your character is a very different representation than people are used to.
He's got a cool sword. Like, yeah. That's sick.
Yeah. You know, just to wrap it up here, tell me what this character is and why you...
Go, Go, Hippo, Go. He represents my willingness to be playful and goofy.
Does he have a voice in your head?
No.
No.
He's always like the voiceless protagonist of just like...
So he'll like grunt a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit of grunting. Like he kind of just looks at you like optimistically and excited, but like you'll turn around and be like, hey, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Hey, man. Hey, how's it going? You know, eyes not on speaking terms, teeth not on speaking terms.
Little chameleon-esque.
Now he's like, You know what? He's a Reddit guy right now where someone's like, hey, you can't do that here. And he's like, oh, is that right? Oh, is that right?
Well, like he does his research strictly on Reddit?
I've actually done my research on Ralph's company policy.
On slash Ralph's.
Oh.
Oh, look at him.
Like, all right.
Oh, he's cute.
Yeah, he's pretty kawaii.
Yeah.
Pretty cute. He's got too many clothes, though. Sorry. Yeah. We got to fix that real quick.
Cool,
oh, no, Hippo, no.
Well, let's talk about your childhood. We're getting into your childhood now. Okay. Yeah. You told me a little bit about growing up in an immigrant family.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, my dad was born in America, but it was like while my immigrant grandmother was like visiting America to look at houses.
Oh.
And then he's born. It's like, whoopsie doopsie.
An American citizen was born.
Oh, we have to. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Family was from Germany, or my dad's side. My mom's side was here, but I think she's like more Italian. So I'm just German-Italian with a bunch of little smatterings of stuff here and there, but yeah.
Do you feel like that childhood shaped who you are in any sense?
I think it probably shaped my parents and through them shaped me. I think there is like an expectation of excellence no matter what you're doing. So, you know, if you're going to go to school, you should get straight A's and straight A pluses if you can. If you're going to, you know, act, well then go pursue acting in the best way, you know. And I was grateful for that level of support, but I think... the idea of doing anything less than what was top-notch just, like, didn't enter into the equation. And I think as a kid, when you're being sort of molded in that environment, it's fine because you don't know anything else. But as an adult, I was like, oh, I'm tired.
Yeah, I think like that would be debilitating for me to be like, you need to be perfect if you're going to do anything. And then your mother, you said, found joy in performance, which kind of inspired you.
Yeah, she did some, like, theater in high school, and I think she very much, like, took that on as a big part of her personality of like, well, you know, I did theater in high school too. And so when I started to pursue that kind of stuff, she was just like, oh, well, you know, I did that. And so she would like help me with lines. And I think that was a fun way for us to connect. We ended up doing a couple community theater shows together.
Oh, nice.
And I think, you know, I was very young, but I think for her too, that was very meaningful. Just be like, I'm doing this activity with my kid, you know.
So then do you move out to L.A.?
I did for college, but also acting. I went to USC for a year. Yeah. I dropped out after I'd booked So Random on the Disney Channel because with the way the schedule was working, I...
Dropped out of school?
Dropped out of school, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so I was like, I think it makes sense to drop out, and I kind of have to. Or I withdrew and was on like a, oh, you can come back whenever kind of vibe. And I was like, I never did.
They're still waiting for you.
Yeah. Damien. Return, Damien. Everything's fine at USC right now.
They always have an empty seat for you.
Yeah.
There's a lot of empty seats.
They keep one empty seat for the students that couldn't be there. And then they pour out a beer and they're just like, here's for Damien. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even drink. And they're like,
and it just looked like someone pissed on the chair.
Someone, because they did. And it covers up the piss. Stain.
It helps mask it.
Helps mask it.
Yeah. Things are getting wet. Bad boy.
What can I say?
Wow, you're a dropout.
You know, dark denim.
Yeah.
A spooky boy.
I feel it. I dropped out of my second year of community college. I get it.
I did that too.
Just a couple of dropouts.
Yeah, just a couple dropouts. Yeah. .tv, available now. And I was like, well, I'm not learning anything. This doesn't make any sense. And my dad had passed, like, not too long before that. And so it was this big, like, sort of reshuffling of my brain where it's like, okay, well, there's not this, like, parental need to, like, first of all, I don't have any, like, I always considered him like the smartest guy. So I was like, who do I check in with about this? And also there's no validation of like, it's okay. You know, I still had my mom, thankfully, but it just wasn't quite the same.
So what was that big shift in your life like at that point?
It was a lot. And I think at the time I was so busy with filming stuff on Disney that like, I didn't really have a whole lot of time to like mourn the process of, you know, academic greatness of any kind. Like, didn't really sink in until like the show was done and I got my own apartment in mid-city and just auditioning for things for voiceover. But like, it was the first time I'd been left up to my own devices. And I realized like, looking back now, I should have realized a lot sooner, but I was like, I'm not wired the same way. Like I would go 3 days and never say another word to another human being because I'm home. I don't have anything to do. What would I do? You know? And I realize now people are like, oh, I have to go out and be social. I have to go talk to folks.
You're perfectly fine in solitude.
Yeah.
I think it's a good place to be.
It's a good place to be, but I don't know if it was healthy.
Oh, you need it? You feel like you needed social interaction?
I think so. I think I did a lot of like, I think that's where my like rumination had a chance to first like run free because I didn't have the distraction of being around other people and living life. I would like, you know, how do you occupy a full day when you have nothing to do? I didn't have a job. If I didn't have an audition that day, you know, what do? I didn't stream. I didn't anything. It'd just be like, okay, well, this is a full Tuesday. What do I do on Tuesdays? Nothing. Here I am. And, you know, it's very easy to fall into like a depressive state there. And I think I did. So that's when I started to think about school and like, what is my life? And like, do I go back? Do I move to New York? You know, do I even want to be an actor? Like, what are all these things? So
how did that take you to where you ended up?
I think because voice acting auditions came in at such a high rate, that was at least something to hold on to be like, well, this is a thing I'm doing. At least I did something on this day. Even if it was a 2-minute commercial radio spot read and I'll never see anything from it, you know, I can at least say like, well, I tried. I did something. But I also think trying to pursue excellence throughout my whole life in whatever capacity I could at that time, I finally had the chance to do nothing and literally nothing. So the pendulum had kind of swung back in the other direction. So I think if I didn't have that like goblin rot kind of vibe then. Goblin rot? Is that
goblin rot? Goblin? Sounds right. It sounds right.
Goblin rot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a Magic the Gathering card, I'm sure. I don't think I would have had the perspective that I have today of like, what is a healthy balance?
So you kind of had to go the opposite way, you know, fully.
It's the burnout thing. You know, you try so hard for so long and then you don't just dial it back a little bit. You're just like, I'm done, you know?
Yeah. So. Close.
How was your childhood?
Great.
I would love to move on from this moment. This hurts a lot.
Damien, did you have any questions for Anthony?
Anthony.
No, yes, Damien.
You know, you come back to Smosh and see this whole sort of grouping. What do you think about me?
What do you think about me? You want a review?
Yeah. You know what? Give me an employee review.
Oh, yeah. This will be good. This will be good.
This ought to be good.
Your ability to, I mean, improvise is like top tier. I feel like you're very good at integrating everyone into the group dynamic. Why are you looking at me like that?
I don't know. I just put you on the spot.
Is this how it feels? Is this the face you look when you're getting complimented?
No,
you look so happy.
I'm being mischievous right now. This is less about being complimented, more like I'm watching you try to figure out like, oh, Kara, do I do the fucking Oreo?
I just think you're a good guy. I don't know, man.
I just like being a mischievous little punk, and I'm like,
you little shit.
Yeah,
you're such a little shit.
I'm a little doo-doo.
You're a little doo-doo.
Just a little doo-doo, man.
A little shit doo-doo.
My turn. Anthony, you.
I don't want to hear it.
I don't want to hear. Needs improvement? Too many rings.
I don't want to hear it. Hey, fuck you. I have 4. You have 3.
Too many.
Oh, really? 3.
Jokes on you? 4.
Oh, you do have 4. See?
Really not so different, you and I. Anthony, where can people find you?
You can find me right here in this chair. I will die in this chair. I will rot. I will not move until I'm decomposed.
That's the dream.
Hell yeah. Thank you, man.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
I expect to see you live streaming you rotting and decomposing in that chair.
I mean, probably if there's one person watching, I'll die in my chair.
I just want a time lapse. I don't want to sit for the whole thing.
You want the thing where it's just like, you know, you just like
I just want to like see you turn into sludge and then maggots start crawling.
Oh,
out
it's
of
the
you.
Fox thing.
Yeah,
that's
where your stomach bursts open and the ants are, and then there's maggots all over.
Why don't I have to die for that to happen? Halloween's coming up.